Are you new to investing? Wondering whether or not you can self-manage your properties? Let us tell you about our partner, Rent Ready. Rent Ready is an awesome property management software that can help you grow and handle every aspect of your real estate investing business. Rent collection, tenant screening, maintenance, lease signing, listing. Honestly, Rent Ready has everything.
One of the best features is their new tenant software, Latchel, where you're able to remove yourself as the landlord from being the middleman between tenants and maintenance calls. And it's also essentially a fraction of the cost of what you would pay for property management.
Let me also mention that Rent Ready is unlimited. All their plans are flat price. This means you can keep adding properties to your portfolio without having to pay more. You can close on all the properties you want and Rent Ready's price stays the same. Best part about it is for you guys is they've given us an amazing deal to pass on to all Weekly Juice listeners. You can get 50% off any Rent Ready plan at rentready.com when you use our code JuicePod. That's rentready.com, rentredi.com with code JuicePod, JuicePod, and you'll get 50% off any plan. If this is your first time here, welcome. During our shows, we interview successful entrepreneurs and investors to spread knowledge, advice, and actionable tactics to help others in the pursuit of financial freedom. We discuss successes, failures, systems, motivations, experiences, and key lessons learned along the way in the hopes that these stories help you along your journey. Tune in every Wednesday to get your weekly juice. If you've been here before and like what you've been hearing, please subscribe, share with friends, rate and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That goes an extremely long way for us. It's simple. Just click on your podcast app, type in our podcast name, The Weekly Juice, click on the reviews and let us know what you think. The more ratings we get, the more eyes we'll get on our show. And in turn, we'll be able to provide you all with high quality guests. You can also find us on Instagram at Weekly Juice Pod for daily content and personal finance tips to assist in your journey towards financial freedom. Welcome back to the Weekly Juice. As always, Ryan and Corey here with another episode for you. Today we have on special guest, Kendra Barnes. Kendra is a 34-year-old real estate investor from the Washington, D.C. area. She's currently living in Texas, has a rental portfolio of about 8 units that generates over $150,000 in income a year. She is a real estate coach now and more is in kind of investing more on the passive side now that she's reached financial freedom and she's giving back. She's showing how one can dive into financial literacy and financial independence through real estate. We talked about the cash flow game.
That got her started.
It opened the door for her and just like sparked the light or the plug that just like set her off. And she's like, wow, I can do this.
And she mentioned in the beginning, I think she said she was a military baby. So she doesn't even know where she like was born. She said that, which I thought was interesting, but she invests in, Rye said she invested in DC and that's where a lot of her properties are, which is a really high price market, which is an interesting way to get started in real estate investing, but stick around and listen to her fourplex story, how she bought a property. We'll let you listen to it, but for $800,000 and the next day it appraised for $1.2 million. So talk about building some equity off the bat. So it's a really cool story. She was featured in Yahoo News and she does one-on-one coaching for real estate investors trying to create financial freedom. $150,000 a year in income from just 8 rentals. How about that?
Small but mighty, to say the least. And it's an amazing portfolio, but she's just a really good person. We at the end of the episode, as we always do, we kind of talk a little bit more personal life stuff. And she's a new mom. So very cool episode. I think people are going to really take to Kendra. And, let's dive in.
Let's do it.
Kendra, welcome to the Weekly Juice. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And we're thrilled to get to know you a bit.
Yeah, thanks for having me, you guys.
Absolutely. So if you could give a little background on yourself, who you are, where you're from, and then how you got into real estate investing.
Yeah. So my name is Kendra. I'm the founder of The Key Resource. I'm a buy and hold investor and I'm a military brat. So I literally don't even know where I'm from. I'm from the world. But I got into real estate investing really randomly. Like I grew up in a middle-class family. Not from a line of real estate investors. I'm not from a wealthy family, but like middle class, like I never wanted for anything. Definitely wasn't poor, wasn't rich, you know, and we weren't wealthy by any means, but my parents always like instilled in me the idea of like savings and like pretty good money habits, but I never thought that I could be a real estate investor because it always seemed like you had to be wealthy first. And it seemed like you had to be like old. And then, you know, for me, I never saw minorities as like real estate investors. And so I was like, it didn't seem like something that I could do. So after going to undergrad, then I went to grad school. I got my bachelor's and my master's in agricultural economics of all things. And I became an international economist for the government. And I hated my job. Like I really hated it, but I was like, this is what you do, right? Like you get a job, you work until you're like 70 and then you retire and then you live the life of your dreams. That's what was like the American dream. So I was just doing that. I didn't know any way out. One random weekend, my husband and I played the game Cash Flow and it was like mind blown. We're like, wait a minute. So you make money with your earned income, but then you make that money make money. And that's the key to wealth. Like, we're like, wait, our money's not making money. We have to do something. And it was like this huge wake up call, because if you guys have played the game, you cannot win without real estate. There's no way to win cash flow if you don't own real estate. And so we kind of translated that into, we can't win in life without real estate. And it just sparked the flame from there.
I'm embarrassed to say, I don't think I've actually ever played the game, but I've read all the Rich Dad Poor Dad books, but I was shown the game by a mentor, but I resonate with you when I found out about the buying or using your earned income to create passive income. It was literally like a bomb went off in my head. And
yes,
it's funny when I see people that we talk to that just find out about it for the first time, you can see it in their eyes. It's like, it's a whole new world that never existed to them. And I guess I kind of want to talk about maybe what you did next. So once you figured out, okay, this is the path I'm taking, right? It's one thing to think it and to realize it. You can read a book, but to actually take the action, that's where you make serious strides. So what did you end up doing next?
We really just like dove right in. We started looking for rental properties the next day. And mind you, we had no idea what we were doing. No idea what to look for. And if you think about it, this was 8 years ago when podcasts like yours were not common. Like now you can go on YouTube, you can learn from people like who are explaining it on a really basic level. You know, 8 years ago, it's like when you thought about real estate investing education, it was like those little seminars in a hotel where they try to sell you this $20,000 program at the end. And that was pretty much it. Now there's so much information, which is good in a way, but I think also people get like analysis paralysis too. But so anyway, we just dove in. We literally start looking for properties. We found a property like 3 months after that and we just bought it. We ran like the most basic numbers ever. We're like, the mortgage is $1,000 and I think we'll be able to make, it was a duplex. Like we can make $1,200 on one side and about, you know, $1,300 or $1,400 on the other side. Let's buy
great
it.
Deal.
And we bought it and it actually did end up being a really good deal, but we didn't even know the first thing about anything.
Wow. So you got lucky, which is great, but also just the action to dive in. And I always talk about this with people who are just trying to get started. It's like, you do not have to, sounds like you kind of did hit a home run actually, maybe by accident, but like, but you don't have to do that when you get started. And everyone wants to have this buttoned up like approach and an answer to every single question. And we didn't have it. No. We still don't have it. And I don't know if we're ever going to actually have it.
No.
So the fact that you just dove in and did it, it probably allowed you to make the mistakes. And then from there, maybe make some tweaks along the way, but that's very cool.
Yeah,
mistakes is an understatement. There were mistakes on that property. It still ended up being a good one in the long run, but it was a lot of learning curves.
Let's talk about some of those. First off, if you could, where did you buy the property and were you in the same state? I feel like you do a lot of out-of-state investing, and then maybe talk about some of the hiccups you had.
Good point. So yes, now I live in San Antonio, Texas, but at the time we were in Washington, D.C. So we lived there for like 10 years. And that was our first property in Washington, D.C. It was a duplex and we bought it. There was a tenant on one side and one side was empty. Mind you, at the time, we didn't know anything about house hacking. And if we did, it would have changed a lot of things. But so we bought a rental property with a mortgage. And you know, if you're buying a rental property, you got to put down 20 to 25%. That's a lot of money. And in our case, that was $57,000. So you're talking about two people who had good government jobs, but we weren't saving to buy real estate. We were traveling three times a year internationally. We were building custom closets in our house. We were just like living. And to come up with 57,
by the way, that's what 99% of people do. So it's not like you were doing anything wrong, but it's interesting to see. Like, you get the money, you're like, I guess I should remodel my kitchen, right? And then like, that's what people do. So go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Exactly. And so to come up with that kind of money, it wasn't that we were broke. We just hadn't been saving for it. And so what we ended up doing was borrowing the money from our retirement account. And what I will pause and say is, this is not financial or legal advice. If anyone decides to do this, please consult with a financial advisor. For us, it actually worked out beautifully, because with our retirement account with the government, you know, we were basically borrowing from ourselves and then paying ourselves back with interest. And we used that money for the down payment. So that's how we end up getting that first duplex.
That's awesome that you bring that up. And it's a very creative way. Yeah. And it's such a creative way to dive in, right? Like, you need, let's just say, roughly $60,000. Like, oh my God, wow. Like, this is my nest egg, or I might not have it, right? Like, that's a large chunk of change. So can you talk about the process of using your retirement accounts? I think there's a bunch of different ones between a 401k, Roth IRA. And then, you know, was it essentially like a loan off yourself, and then you have to pay back a certain interest point? Like, maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but what did you guys do?
Yeah. So there's two different types of loans that we were able to take. One is for a primary residence. And basically, if you're borrowing for a primary residence, then you can borrow a higher amount. But there's a general purpose loan that you can use for anything. We had to use that because it wasn't going to be our primary. And you can only borrow up to a certain amount. So we both borrowed the max we could, and it ended up being enough. And then I think my husband also took some money from like a mutual fund to kind of like top everything off. But and so, yes, you're borrowing it from yourself, and then you're paying yourself back with interest. And I think we had to pay it back in like 5 years was the time limit they gave us, but you could pay it back early too. And I don't remember the exact interest rate, but it was low. It was insanely low.
That's very cool. And it just shows your drive, right? It's, you talk about playing cash flow and then learning about it and then diving in, you know, the next day, literally researching, trying to take action. And realizing, hey, we're not going to use any of our own personal money. Well, it is your money, right? But you're using your investments. So you're super strategic.
Yeah.
A lot of people would stop at that step and just be like, whoa, I'm not touching my investments. So I think it's important to fast forward to now. You're now 32, retired from the 9-to-5 life.
You're older than 32. You retired at 32, right?
Yeah, I retired at 32. I'm 34 now.
Got it.
Oh, okay. A couple of years.
No, I saw retired at 32. I just wanted to highlight
that.
That's
okay.
That's still awesome. The show, like, super young. And then, so retired from the 9-to-5 life, but you have a portfolio of properties that essentially pay you passively per month. Can you talk about your current portfolio? How many properties you have, potentially what it brings in an income in a year, whatever you're comfortable sharing?
Yeah. So this is where people get super shocked, because I think they hear that I retired, or my husband and I, we both retired, and they think, oh, you must own like 40 properties, like blocks and blocks of properties. And that's not the case. And what I want to say to everyone listening is, when it comes to retiring or reaching financial freedom, you have to do what's right for you. And what's important to figure out is, how much do you personally need to sustain your lifestyle? And you cannot compare your journey to anyone else's. What's also important to remember is, and I'm going to tell you how many properties we had when we retired. What's also important to remember is, our portfolio is in DC, which not only is an expensive market, but the rental income is insanely high. And so how much we were able to make with our rentals is very different than someone's going to make in Detroit or Cleveland or Chicago or different places like that. Right. And so when you hear my story, don't think, well, I can't make that much where I live, I'm doing it wrong. No, every area is different. So when we retired, we only had 8 units. And I say only, and don't get discouraged if you're like, that's still a lot. But I know people that literally have 60 units or 30 or 40. And so, we only had 8 units when we retired. It was a 4-unit, a duplex, a single family home, and a condo. And then, of course, our personal home too. But that was it.
I think it's very important to mention here. I'm thinking the reverse of what you're saying, that people get discouraged based on that. I think that what people are thinking, you know, probably 25% of our listeners, which is a big majority, not a majority, but it's a lot of our listeners, live in really high priced markets. So they're thinking to themselves, oh, I can invest in DC and I can invest in New York and Philly and Chicago, like, you know, the areas of Chicago that are really nice. Like, I can invest in high priced markets. We interviewed people from Boston, and Boston is an extremely high priced market. So I actually think it's more of like,
it's possible.
I can retire on 8 units. I mean, Ryan and I are over here. We changed our strategy from have to get to 60 units to no, we don't need 60 units. We need the number of cash. What's the cash yes. flow number that it produces? So I read on your website that you have $150,000 in income per year from your investments in real estate. Is this the rental income total? And then from there you deduct the expenses. I'm just curious, like how you get to this number. And maybe if you could talk about like what that all brings in and how the numbers play out.
That's exactly right. That's the rental income before expenses. And honestly, the biggest piece of that for us was when we house hacked our 4-unit apartment building. That catapulted everything. That was the game changer, because when you're house hacking, and if you're listening and you're not sure what house hacking is, I know it sounds a little illegal because it's like hacking, but it's perfectly legal. It's basically a hack because it's a way to get a rental property and a primary residence at the same time. And you're able to put down much less, right? You don't have to put down that huge down payment. And so we bought a 4-unit apartment building in Washington, D.C., and it was $800,000, which I know that's a lot, right? That's super expensive. But because we house hacked and used FHA, our down payment was only about $17,000. And then we had like closing costs as well. And so if you compare that to how much we paid for a down payment for the duplex, that's so different. And it's the building was worth more. The rental income was more. The neighborhood, you know, was like, quote unquote, better. And, you know, we were able to make more. And so bought that building, lived in one unit, rented out the others. But let's look at the numbers for the rental income. We rented to Section 8 in that building. And when we were living there, of course, we were taking up that one space. But when we moved out, one unit alone was making $4,000 a month. Just one out of 4 units. Wow. The lowest amount of rent we got at any point in that building was like $2,800. So just think about that. Like at the peak, we were making about $12,000 a month in rental income just from that one building.
One of the things to highlight here, this is crazy, really, in a good way, but like when people get into real estate investing, they think, I want to make the smallest risk investment, and they correlate that to dollar figures. And it's very, not backwards, but it makes sense to me why people think that. But what ends up happening is you get into a higher investment dollar figure wise, but it's actually safer because it's going to appreciate. I bet that property has appreciated since. And yeah, I'm sure it has. And not only has it appreciated, but the percentage that is appreciated gives you hundreds of thousands of dollars in appreciation as opposed to tens of thousands if you buy $100,000 property. So making $12,000 a month off of one property, even if it's $800,000, you're over the 1% rule right there. Yeah. It's like, even in a high price market,
it's a mindset shift where people are, a lot of people, I feel like they hear the 800,000, they get scared and they're like, whoa, I'm about to jump into almost $1 million of debt. I can't do this. Like, this is insane. You're telling us that you put down $17,000 to live in this, buy yourself X amount of income.
It was like 20,000. It wasn't seven. It was like $20,000.
20,000. Okay. But not that much, to be honest, on an $800,000 property. And then another hack is like, you're living in it for a year, then you can move out and have it as an investment property. And I just, now I'm almost scared to ask you, because I know it's DC. Like, what is that appreciate? What did it appreciate for now? It's gotta be worth over $1 million right now.
So let me just tell you this. When we purchased it and when we got the appraisal, it appraised for 1.1 then. And that was 4 years ago. I'm just gonna leave that there.
How did you get it at, well, that's a strategy there. So how did you buy it at 25% discount? What was the, was it not managed well? Was it just the owner wanted to get out? It's very important to realize that not only has it appreciated since, but you bought it with $400,000 worth of equity. Like, okay. Yeah. One day you wake up and your net worth's $400,000 higher because of this one move you made.
It's for like, $20,000.
Yeah. For $20,000.
Think about that.
Exactly. We did not know that though. We had no idea what appraised that much higher. The owner, I don't think he knew either, but also the building did have a little bit of issues. It had mold in one unit that was empty. And so we had to get the mold remediated and stuff. It was on the market for a while. You know, it had tenants in it already. People don't like inheriting tenants. We love inheriting tenants. We've done it 3 times so far. And we'll probably do it again. And so I think there were some issues there, but it was worth it for us. Another thing to note is when we ran the numbers for that property, so the mortgage was about $5,000 a month, which is also high, but we not only thought about the rental income we were going to make, we thought about the money we were going to save by living there, because we no longer had to pay for our living expenses. And so before we moved there, we were paying about $1,800 a month for our mortgage for our primary residence. Now we're stacking that money. And that's another thing to think about when you're house hacking, is the money you're saving too.
Okay. This is mind blowing. It's great. I'm curious how you're finding these deals. Is this something that you just wake up and you look on the MLS and they hit you in the face? Have you created relationships with lenders or realtors? Title, you know, I'm just curious, how do you put yourself out there? Let's say somebody, because I know there's somebody listening to this that's on the other end that's ready to run through a brick wall and like, I'm going to go create $400,000 worth of equity. And I live in DC. How do I do it?
Ooh, see, DC is tough now. Remember, this was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And right. So let me tell you this, there is a building right next to our 4-unit. They converted into condos. Those condos are now selling for like $700,000 each, and they're like 1-bedroom condos. So if you can think about a condo that costs just about as much as we paid for that 4-unit building, and they share a wall. They literally share a wall. So DC is a whole other animal now.
A high price market in general doesn't have to be, yes, DC. Like, how are you finding, how have, yes, you found these deals?
So we always use a real estate agent, but honestly, it's like every time we found a deal, we found it ourselves, like on Redfin or like driving down the street and we see a sign and then we'll tell our agent. And so I encourage everyone to depend on your agent, like they're your advocate, but don't be afraid to send your agent deals too, and they can still represent you. So we found it on Redfin and we're like, hey, we want to go see this property. And we went and saw it, and like the rest is history. We never knew that one, it would appreciate like it did so quickly. And we also didn't know that within 6 months of us buying it, the rents basically doubled in that area just because of gentrification. That's something we didn't even know how to research and how to look for. Now there are things that I know to look for in different neighborhoods and things to look for on different city planning websites and things to kind of see where the city is going, what direction they're going in different neighborhoods. But we kind of just fell into it. We knew the numbers would work at the current rental rates, but when that rent basically doubled like 6 months after we purchased it, it was a wrap. We're like, okay, this is gold. That was it.
Can you talk about some of those things you do look for now that you've learned? There's people, because we have investors that have been in the game for a while, and they might want, they're like, okay, like I get how to buy a property. I get how to find it. No, run the numbers. Like, what do you look for in a gentrification area? And like, okay, this could take off in the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that is kind of like this new buzzword is like opportunity zones. I don't know if you guys are familiar. Yeah, I'm sure you guys are because y'all are real estate investors, right? So, but if you're listening and you're not familiar, I'm not going to get into the nuances because it's super nuanced, lots of different layers to it. But I'll say this, like investing in an opportunity zone is one thing, and it's a tax deferral strategy. But what I look for when I'm looking at properties now is where they fall on the opportunity zone map. So every city should have a opportunity zone map where that city was designated to lay out what they're deeming opportunity zones. And that's where all the development is going to be in the next few years. So the city is incentivizing developers and real estate investors to invest and develop in those areas. And so when I'm looking at a map, I'm like, oh, even if the property isn't falling exactly inside the lines of an opportunity zone, if it's close by, then I know that that area is going to be just pumped with tons of new development. And so that's something that I look for.
I like that. Thank you. One more thing before, Corey, you jump in. I think we might switch topics here, but you mentioned Section 8, and a lot of people get scared when they say, they're like, Section 8, whoa, like you have the government helping them pay. Like, this just seems like too much of a liability. Can you talk about
caveat? We love our Section 8 tenant. We have Section 8 tenants too. So I think it's like kind of a misconception.
I was trying to lead her a little bit. Yeah, for sure. But like, just to show listeners, like, right, we both of us have seen success with a Section 8 tenant. I don't know if you know Dr. Joseph Asamoah. He's from DC. He's a stud, and just he literally will die by that. He's like, I will only go Section 8. So can you talk about some of the perks and why people should not be scared?
Yeah, let me tell you, Section 8 landlords were some of the only landlords who did not get nervous once all the pandemic hit and people weren't getting rental payments, right? You guys were like, oh, we're going to get our money. And that money's going to come pretty much no matter what. So that's the perk right there. The other thing I will say is the only time we have had problems with Section 8 tenants is when we did not choose them ourselves. And so that's like inherited Section 8 tenants, because with Section 8, you can vet them just like any other tenant. And in DC, you can even go visit them at their current living situation before they come to your place. And so I also want to remind people too that when it comes to like voucher programs like Section 8, Section 8 is not the only one. There are programs for disabled people, for veterans. There are programs for like people who were like previously homeless and going through programs. And so I think people think Section 8 is the only thing. And it's like someone who has all these kids and all this stuff. We've had tenants with vouchers. It's just like a single man in his 50s and he's super low maintenance. And so think about it like that too. There are several voucher programs out there.
It's important to note because our Section 8 tenant, she's probably 60. And she has her children and grandchildren that visit her, but she works at a big company, but doesn't make a lot of money. And she's just a single woman. And so like, it's just like that. And she's a pleasure to deal with. So it's like
low maintenance
and she pays her rent every single month on time. And it's important to note that I think that maybe the misconceptions are what make people like you successful in the business. So maybe I don't know if you want them to stay around, but the whole point is that like there is a niche and a way to make money in every single scenario in every single market. It just, you have to find what that niche is.
Yes. So
I want to talk about kind of maybe what you see as a good deal now, if you are continuing to buy, or if you just plan to continue to purchase real estate, or maybe some of the previous deals that you've done, what do you look for in terms of cash flow or maybe return on investment or some of the nitty gritty there that leads you to say, I think this is a good deal and this will work for my portfolio?
Yeah, I always look for the ability to pivot. And like, for me, that means, like you said, being successful in multiple scenarios. I think people get this idea in their head and they're like, I'm going to buy this property. It's going to be so amazing on Airbnb. The numbers are great. And they stop there. And it's like, that's cool. Cause on Airbnb, you can make like three times the amount as a long-term tenant. And that's fine. But what if it doesn't work out? What if the pandemic hits, like, you know, and people stop traveling for a little while? What if, you know, it's a condo and they say you can't do Airbnb anymore? You have to make sure the numbers work in several different scenarios. And if it didn't work like that, I'm not doing the deal because I want to be able to easily pivot and still be profitable.
Wonderful.
Cool. So we talked creative funding in the beginning with that, with your fourplex or apartment building. Can you talk to other forms of creative funding that you might use? I just basically want to know how you fund your deals and if you've done anything outside of like your own cash, maybe private lending or hard money lending.
Yeah, I've never done hard money lending. And typically we've used mortgages. We've used cash once. And the only like private lending that we've ever really done is like getting a loan from my parents. And for this deal, it was a condo that was $45,000. The only reason we couldn't buy it ourselves cash was because we were about to buy a house with a mortgage for ourselves. And, you know, you can't be spending $45,000 while you're getting a mortgage. Like, they're going to shut it down. You can't spend large amounts of money while you're going through the closing process, right? Or the underwriting process for a mortgage. So we're like, okay. I told my mom, like, look, I know y'all have this in the bank. You're making like $2 a year on it in interest. We'll pay you $6 in interest in like 6 months.
That's amazing. Triple it.
She's like, wow, I got tripled.
Or like the bank is only giving you like $2.05. We'll give you $6.10 and it'll be better than you can, right? And they did it, right? That was the best loan we've ever got.
Yeah, I wouldn't discount yourself on the private lending here too, because like getting from friends and family is private money. Yeah. Lending. So, I mean, like that's the ideal way to do it. So, that's great. I wonder if you could talk a number of different strategies for yourself. I'm wondering if you could talk to people about how you systematize your business and maybe how do you either A, run the numbers or B, just keep track of maintenance tenants and just keep it all and created and treated like a business and not just like this hobby that you have.
Yeah, that was a big shift for us going from, you know, it being just, I don't even know. It just wasn't really professional. Then we finally created an LLC and all that stuff. But as far as systems, we use like an online management system. There are several out there. I'm sure you guys probably use one of the, you know, popular ones too.
Shout out to Rent Ready.
You use what is it called?
Rent Ready. We love Rent Ready.
Oh, I haven't tried that one. I'll have to look
it up. Yeah. You can use our promo code JuicePod to get 50% off. But anyway, little plug there. But no, Rent Ready is great. It's like, I think it's like $8 to $10 a month. And you can do like, you can have a maintenance software where you can connect your tenants to like have them call a specific line if you don't want to self-manage and take all the calls. So anyway, we love Rent Ready, but go ahead.
Nice. I was just going to say, as far as numbers, my husband is really the numbers guy. You don't see him like on my site or on social media because he's very behind the scenes person too. So he's like, yeah, you go do your thing, like teach everybody. But he is the numbers person. He has these Excel sheets that will make your head spin. So that's kind of like his lane.
That's cool. So that's a, you kind of use Excel sheets to run the numbers and keep everything in kind of one place. But when it comes to like, I guess, cause you only have 8 units, are you guys self-managing or do you have, you are self-managing?
We self-manage. And so the platform we use does have like, I think like your platform, it has a maintenance request. You can like, you know, organize the leases and all that kind of stuff. But we also use Google Drive, you know? So, but you're right. We don't have like tons and tons and tons of units to manage. So it's pretty, pretty simple.
Do you find that because you're investing in a market like DC or Maryland that, and they're higher priced markets, that you have higher quality tenants and less maintenance that goes along with that?
No, I think our easiest properties are the newer ones that, you know, were built within the last, I don't know, 15 years, but the old properties tend to have the thing. It's like everything breaks at once. Like you'll be good for like 6 months. And then like one day everything breaks. It's always the older properties.
Maybe talk a little bit about like the, I don't know if psychology is the right word, but like what goes into how you manage that as you have a bunch of maintenance calls come in at once. Is it something that you're used to now? And I think I'm asking this selfishly because what ends up happening is exactly what you said to us. We go, if we don't hear from our tenants for like 3 months or so, we're like, oh, what's coming? Like something's going to happen. Right. So I'm curious how you handle that. Is it second nature? Do you have it automated? Is it just something that you have kind of, how have you figured out the way that you take care of it?
You know what used to happen, because this is actually our second time living out of state because we're in Texas now. This is our second time being in Texas while our properties were across the, you know, the US. What would happen is we would get a call from our tenant, and then my husband would call out a maintenance person or call this, you know, plumber HVAC person to go fix this thing. The person would get there and be like, they just need to push this button. So we were spending all this money and time. So we was like, okay, next time, if there's an issue, they got to FaceTime us. They got to video chat us, like send us pictures, because it's usually a very simple fix. And what would also happen sometimes, my husband be like, okay, rather than me like spending money to get someone to go fix it, he's very handy. He would literally just book a flight. He'd be like, I'm just going to go out there tomorrow. And he'd find some cheap flight for like $200, fly out there and just fix it and fly back. But it just got to be a lot if we weren't like kind of fact checking first. We have to make sure we can verify with video or pictures. So that's something we implemented.
That's cool. A lot of, I don't know, there's like three different pillars here, right? You can self-manage, then you can get in a full-on property manager, or like now programs like for us specifically, Rent Ready, they literally are building these in for landlords. It's almost like a hotline they call, and it's linked up with a contractor. Wow. And they'll FaceTime the contractor and be like, oh, nope, that's just a little leak. So you're going to save your husband a couple flights by just linking up with one of these. I'm sure your program you use might be coming out with this as like a new feature too, because we're seeing it become more and more popular. Wow. But the cool thing is like, we're an hour away from our property. So the same thing is like, we could be 7 hours away from our property. It doesn't matter. We're still going to be calling someone else to do the work. Yeah. We're not going there. So we love this feature where it's like, okay, maybe this is like $30 to $50 a month, whatever it is, as opposed to spending $300 or $200, whatever 10% of your rent is, for this property manager to just be like, oh yeah, like we just had to, they had to turn the knob on, you know, and then you got invoices out the wazoo. So it is a newer thing. That. The internet's helping. It's cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We, I guess it's kind of happening as 2020, 2021. We're getting into a new age of digital technology where a lot of these problems can be handled through an app, and we love it. So
we had a CPA on, a couple episodes ago, and we, Corey and I both have a CPA and it helps us run our business, but we like advocating for them. And just, if you could potentially talk to your tax planning and like, how important do you believe it is to have a CPA to work hand in hand with you throughout the year, as opposed to going on like TurboTax or H&R Block to just be hope and pray that this thing works out?
Oh man, it's so important because you could go on TurboTax or whatever you use just to get your taxes done. But when you're getting into investing and like building a portfolio, the strategy is what you need. Like that's what we're paying for. Like my husband can do our taxes, but he cannot strategize and like really know all the nuances and the intricacies that will get us to that next level. So that's what's important. That's what's valuable.
That's the tax planning as opposed to the tax prep or whatever.
Yeah, we learned this like a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. This is good. Great information. So thank you very much. I want to talk about your future goals with your business. Not just, we're going to get into the key resource in a second, but specifically your real estate investing portfolio. You have $150,000 a year in passive income. You have 8 units. Are you sitting on the sidelines right now? Or are you still actively looking? What, you know, for Kendra, what's the next, and your husband, what are the next maybe 3 to 5 years look like as you, you know, are you still buying real estate?
Yeah. So now that we are in Texas, we've only lived here for about a year and a half. So basically the entire duration of the pandemic, but now that we're kind of getting our footing here, we're going to be transitioning from focusing on DC to focusing on buying here in San Antonio. And it's a really great market because there are 4 military bases here. There's lots of major attractions, hospitals, like the market is just amazing. And so I'm going to be trying a lot of new things this year. I'm going to be getting into shipping container home rentals for like short-term rentals, which I'm excited about. Also just invested in my very first real estate investment trust, which like has worked out beautifully. I don't know if you mind me sharing the numbers on that, but
100%.
Please do.
Okay. I had 100K and I'm like, okay, I could go buy a property for 100K cash, right? And usually if you're buying a property around 100K, you're probably gonna cash flow, I don't know, $800 max. I mean, not even cash flow, you're probably gonna make $800 in rental income. Who knows what your expenses are? Like, so let's say you buy a 100K property and you're making like $500, $600 a month or $700, $800 at the most. So that's one thing, but then that comes along with the headaches or potential headaches of owning a property, right? So I started researching the real estate investment trust and I realized that I could invest in a REIT and get about $500 or $600 a month in return if I invested $100,000 in it. So I'm like, well, why don't I do this? Not that I'm going to stop buying rental properties because there's value in actually owning the property too, but it's so important to diversify. And so here I am, I invested $100K and I'm making $533 a month in the dividends, which I think is pretty good for not doing anything at all, right?
I think this
so what
is
do you guys
a
think about that?
No, I love it. I'm so glad you brought this up. And the reason is because what we found out through interviewing a lot of different investors is that once you have your nest egg or you're in financial freedom or you've reached this sort of level, mm-hmm. the end goal ends up being more passivity. And we're finding out about that from like Steve Rosenberg was saying this. We had him on a couple of weeks ago and people were saying that we want to get to a level of passivity. So you're saying taking that $100,000 and getting this, I didn't even realize in a REIT that you were actually making cash flow back. Maybe it's just something that I had in my set in my head that I thought that you were almost like investing in a stock where if you sell it later, you'll have this appreciation play.
That too. So I bought this REIT. I bought into this REIT about 4 weeks ago and I've already made about $11,000. If I were to sell it, I would get about $11,000 right in capital gains, but I'm also getting the $533 a month in dividends. And so that's what's really cool about it. But here's the thing though. So that was $100K in the REIT. If I would have leveraged that $100K and use it as a down payment on the property, it would have been a whole different story. So me comparing it was thinking if I used $100K to buy a property cash, that's going to put you in a different bracket of property. But if I would have like leveraged $100K and gotten a mortgage, clearly the property.
You could have 4 properties for 100K.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah, so
that's cool. That's a good distinction. Thanks for bringing that up. And we haven't dove too deep on REITs. So can you just talk about the process of like, where did you find this REIT and like, where can people go to research and potentially like, I'm thinking like Acorns for stocks, right? And then, or you have like Vanguard, Fidelity and all this, like these machines that kind of help you go forward. Like where the heck would you even go for a REIT?
And do you need $100,000 to get in too? That's another thing that like, yeah.
That's the really cool thing about REITs is you can invest with as little as like, I think $5,000 or even less. I mean, you can put in whatever and you're going to get out that if it's like 6% return, you're going to get 6% per year. So you divide that by 12 and that's how we got to the 533. So I'm getting 6% on my $100,000 per year divided by 12, right? So anyway, the REIT that I invested in is called Main, M-A-I-N. So $Main is how you look it up. Now the price for it now is higher than when I got it 4 weeks ago. So if you invested 100K into it now, you're not gonna get the same return that I am. But, and I also want to pause and again say, this is not legal or financial advice. Please do your own due diligence. The way I found out about it is I'm in a few different REIT Facebook groups, and I also have taken an online stock trading course. Oh, but your original question was, I actually purchased it through TradeStation, and that's where I do stock investing. And so you buy it just like you're going to, you know, buy into stocks, just through that same platform.
Cool. That's awesome. So people can just look, like, for example, if you have Acorns and I have Vanguard, yeah, I could find it on there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really cool to note that you have the ability to create cash flow from it too, because I was looking into that, and I'm thinking, like, as if Ryan and I were to put $25,000 into a property, we're realizing that if you were to turn that to cash flow in a REIT, you're only getting 6%. So you may be able to get a lot more if you do it on the active side and buy property. Yes. But when you get to a certain point, you have $100,000, or even if it's $50,000 to play with, maybe you want that $200-$300 a month in cash flow. Yeah. And then as you continue to grow your portfolio, and maybe you sell a property, you make $200,000, you turn that into $1,200 a month in passive income. So it's very, as the numbers get higher, it's just so much more advantageous to, like, get on the passive, really passive side.
Well, it's just cool. Like, once you're in the game, you can start to play so many different avenues, right? And, like, things that you may never even thought of. You would have never even probably known about all this stuff had you not played the cash flow game, right? So it's just cool that, like, one decision, it changed your life, but only because you took action, right? So, and consistent daily action, focused action, clearly, all in on real estate. So that's awesome. I want to transition, because we're winding down to the end of the show, towards your business, The Key Resource. So can you talk about that? Like, what specific, why you created it, and what, I guess, you offer?
Yeah. So representation is really important. It's what I realized in the beginning of my journey. When I started sharing with my friends what my husband and I were doing, they were like, how did y'all find this money? Did you rob a bank? Like, and I'm like, no, you don't have to rob a bank. I would never do that, because I would never last a day in jail. I would literally never, I would just shrivel up.
Hey, well, look, honestly, probably us too. Same with us.
So what I realized is that young people, especially young people who look like me, didn't realize it was possible, and they needed to see someone that looked like them to do it. And so I'm like, you know what? There's no reason I made all these mistakes for anyone that knows me or that comes across me to make the same mistakes. Like, so why not share my journey? And so that's what I started doing. And like you said, I don't have all the answers, but I'm willing to bet on myself, put myself out there, and I know I'm gonna figure it out one way or the other. And that's how I've gotten to where I am. And so with The Key Resource, I basically share, like, inspiration and education to lift as I climb, because I'm still climbing. Like, I'm still learning. I'm still doing things for the first time as well. I've never flipped a property. I've never wholesaled, you know, a property. So it's a fun journey, and I'm just bringing people along with me.
Great. That's awesome. Core four, should we get to it?
Yeah, sure. So as we mentioned in the beginning of the show, we have a segment of our show called The Core Four, and it's basically personal questions, just so that ourselves and guests can get to know you a little bit better on a personal level. So the first question, we'll keep it super basic for you. What's your favorite investing or business book that has helped you elevate your game and see success?
The Big Leap.
Never heard of it. Explain.
It's about self-limiting beliefs, and I'll just leave it there, because the book is so good. You've got to, it's life-changing.
Do you know who the author is?
I can't remember, which is so terrible, but
it's fine. The Big Leap, but it's a mindset shift book, right?
And it just, yes, and it is probably one of the most transformational books that I personally read.
Perfect.
Awesome. I'm curious to know, as our second question, what is your, has been your biggest mistake that you made in your investing career, and what have you learned from it? And we already know that it's not buying the fourplex. So sounds like that was, like, the best thing you ever did.
Yeah, it was the best thing. But the worst thing, I think, was not house hacking first. And because with that duplex we bought, it was a perfect house hack opportunity, and we would only had to put down like $8,000 instead of $57,000. So that was a big misstep.
Cool. So question number three is, who is your who for 2021? And essentially, by meeting this person, you feel your life or your business will be propelled to the next level. And if you don't have someone in mind, who's someone that has helped you along your journey that you're super, super thankful for and feel they helped elevate your game?
Yeah, so this is probably not the answer y'all were expecting, but I would say my daughter, because I'm a new mom. So I have a 1 year old. And honestly, when my husband and I started investing, we didn't have kids. And so it was like, we were doing it for ourselves, but now it's like so much bigger than us. And even beyond the money, what's so powerful for me now is realizing that even if my daughter doesn't want to invest in real estate when she grows up, I don't care. But seeing us do this, she'll know that she can do whatever she wants. And that's, I'm like getting emotional, but it's so powerful for me. And it's like changing the way I do things. And honestly, today, I just got all the documents in place for our estate plan, right? Because now it's like bigger than just buying buildings and getting cash flow. It's a legacy. And so I want to make sure that everything we're doing is not in vain. So that's my person for 2021.
First of all, we love that because we talk mindset. And actually the last question of the core four is, what do you want your legacy to be? And I think that you kind of said it right there for your daughter, but if you have more to elaborate on, please.
Yeah. So for my family, of course, like I said, but also just from anyone that comes in contact with me or comes across, you know, my platform, I want them to remember me as someone who was like literally lifting as I climb. Like, I'm not going to the top by myself. There's no need for that. There's room for everybody. Like, I don't see, you know, teaching people how to do what I did. I don't see that it's going to like replace me, right? I really believe there's room for everybody, especially in real estate, right? Just pull up a seat. And so that's what I want my legacy to be, lifting as I climb.
I really like that. Giving more than you take. And it proves to pay back in dividends time after time. We've seen it. It's, I don't know, firm believer in karma and just giving way more than you take. And it'll come back full-heartedly or wholeheartedly. So last segment of the show is called The Last Drop. And this is essentially, we're looking for advice you'd give your younger self if you could go back in time. So you go back to young 18, 19, young Kendra, what would you tell her now?
I would say stop living above your means. I was like literally just swiping that credit card with no idea of the repercussions it would have. Some of those clothes I bought, I'm like, y'all gonna have to bury me in these clothes because I literally am still paying for them. Thinking about that first mortgage we got on our first home, the interest rate we got was because of the credit card debt that I had incurred, which made my credit score a certain, you know, level. And that I didn't know that it affected things like that. And so we still have that original mortgage on that house. And so in my mind, I'm still paying for those J. Crew clothes I bought back in college that I really couldn't afford. So that's my message to my younger self, is to stop living above your means.
I think it's important to note that you don't have to build a $150,000 a year real estate portfolio and take this, you know, this path that you're taking to this big portfolio. If you simply live below your means and invest in safe assets, you automatically bring yourself into a headspace that is not desperate. And I think that that's like it's a big thing for people, where the reason that a lot of people stay maybe not wealthy or poor is just because they don't understand how to use money. So you can do the route that Kendra did, or you can just live below your means a little bit if you just want to not have so much desperation in your life.
I think financial literacy is key and self-education, right? I mean, for Corey and I you said it too. We've all been through undergrad, right? Like, you go through high school, you go through undergrad, and you're like, okay, what did I really learn? Like, you get a lot of experiences, yeah, right? And like, it teaches it, you know, I can name a million different things, but like getting thick skin, yeah, meeting different types of people, put in certain situations. Cool. But like, tactfully, I'm like, wow, the stuff in the books, I don't remember any of it. And then I'm like, okay, you get thrown into the workforce and they're like, oh, did you sign up for your 401k? You're like, what's a 401k? And then they're like, oh, you're going to make 20 grand this year and plus extra in commission. You're like, 20 grand. I'm rich. This is sweet. You used to make 3 grand landscaping. And so it's just, you gradually like come across, each step of your life, you get hit with new experiences like this with money, and you're like, oh my God, like, I don't know what to do. And you lean on other people that in your life, right, in your little bubble. But sometimes those people are the wrong people to lean on because they're not where you want to be anyways. And that's where I think a lot of people fall into the trap, and they could lean on the Key Resource and other educational platforms where it's like, go out. The biggest thing you could do for yourself today is just read, research, watch YouTube videos, but like personal finance and how to manage your money, because no matter what stage of life you're in, you're going to have to come into play with money, and you're in the game, whether you like it or not. So you're either playing it or you're getting played by it. So I'm super passionate about it because we talk about it every week, but I think that's what's helped me out a lot in my life, is like just going out on my own and researching and learning. And then you stumble across real estate. What makes the 90? I was like, how do I become rich? How do I become a millionaire? 90% of millionaires invest in real estate. And then when I got into that, it opened up 7,000 other doors where I'm like, wow, like the REITs, right? Like just little things along the way. And depending where you are on your journey, you can start jumping into those too. So I appreciate you bringing that up, because clearly I'm passionate.
No, it's great. And now we have the Key Resource for people to go out and follow your journey and listen to all the things that you bring to the market. So, which leads us to, if people want to read about you, learn about you, maybe
connect, network,
just connect. Yeah. What's the best way to get in touch?
Yeah. The best way to find me is on Instagram @thekeyresource. And once you find me there, click the link in my bio, you'll see my site, Facebook group, all kinds of stuff. If you heard me on this podcast, please feel free to reach out via DM. And it was super fun chatting with you guys.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kendra, for coming on. We really appreciate you.
Kendra, it was an absolute pleasure. It was awesome getting to know you. I think you're a great person, and your daughter's very lucky to have you as mom. So keep kicking ass.
Oh, thank you guys. That's me so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.